All right. I have turned the recorder on. We're starting. Today we are going to look at a phrase in the Gospels that is very important. It is called Son of Man. And many people who study the New Testament have written many, many books on this because it is very popular in it's a term that was used by Jesus in many contexts. And it also is a term that throughout the history of the church, people have not understood it. And so many ideas have been suggested as to what this term is, and we will look at a few texts and we will try to evaluate some of what has been said during the last 100 years. But we will also give our own interpretation as well. So we won't just throw our hands up in despair and say we cannot know. Actually, I think we can know what this phrase means. Oh, thank you. Bar Nash, in case somebody wants to hear it. I'm going to say Bar Nash, but if you were reading Ezekiel, you would have heard Ben Adam. But we will suggest that that was a different phrase. It was a different language. They both mean a person. If I am walking down the street and I, today, if I'm telling someone, you know, yesterday I was walking down the street and I met someone, I can say that I met Ben Adam. I can also say in modern Hebrew, I met Bar Nash. And today in modern Hebrew, if I say Bar Nash, it means I'm making him even more anonymous. I'm thinking even less of him than Ben Adam. But,
I know this is Son of Man.
And all of this means Son of Man. Manma, this is okay. This is okay?
Yes.
All right. Yes?
That's it.
Oh, okay. So, what did this phrase mean? What does Son of Man mean? What did the Son of Man mean through the history of the church? Maybe we should start there. Then we will work to our gospel texts. Then we will discuss some modern scholarship. And then we will discuss what we think it means and how it applies to some of these texts.
All in the next 45 minutes.
All in the next 45 minutes. This is what they say, al regel ahad. That's a, you know, when you want to summarize something, you can say it on one foot. But I will not try to teach the Son of Man on one foot. At least not the history of it. I could tell you what I think it means, but I on one foot, but I cannot give you the history. Okay. The church. What does the church think it means? Maybe you can tell me as you grew up, as you first heard about Son of Man, what did you think it meant? What did people tell you that it meant?
Jesus is fully man and fully God.
Okay, is that what the phrase Son of Man meant, or the phrase Son of Man and Son of God? But Jesus is fully man is what the church thinks Son of Man means. He is Son of Man, he's fully man, he is Son of God, he is fully God. Yes? That's not what you were told? Does this mean yes in Chinese?
Yes.
Yes? Okay. Okay. Yes. The church did take the two terms, Son of Man and Son of God, and they put them against each other, and so they said Son of God means divine, Son of Man means human. And already around the year 100 or 120 of the Common Era, we have a book called the Epistle of Barnabas. And in that book, he says, don't call Jesus Son of Man, call him Son of God. Now, why did he say that? Because he thought Son of Man just meant that Jesus was a human, and for him that is not significant, because everyone you talk with is a human. Yeah, everyone you talk with is a human being, is a son of man, so calling Jesus a human is not significant. It is not different. So he said, call him Son of God. And that tells us what he thought Son of Man meant. Okay. However, there is something strange. Now, when we say Son of God or Son of Man in English, it sounds different. It sounds strange. Because in English, we do not say Son of Man, daughter of Eve, how are you doing? We don't talk that way in English. If we say Son of Man, it sounds special, like a title. And that is also true of Greek. In Greek, the phrase that is in our Greek Gospels, O Ios tou anthropou, O Ios tou anthropou, the Son of the Man. Greeks did not talk like that. This is very strange in Greek. So, when we look at Matthew, at Mark, at Luke, every place where we find the phrase Son of Man, it is always the Son of the Man. In Greek, this sounds like a particular son of a particular man. It sounds like perhaps a title, and definitely it sounds foreign. So, where did it come from? What did it mean? For a long time, people have suggested that the phrase Son of Man was a title, and it must have come from the Hebrew Bible. So where in the Hebrew Bible could this have come from that would help us? And the place that people turn to explain the title Son of Man is Daniel chapter 7. In Daniel chapter 7, there is a vision. There is a vision of animals. And after the animals in chapter 7, who represent kingdoms, countries, empires, we get to the last group of people, and that group is not an animal, it is a son of man. And the son of man is in heaven. And I looked and I saw somebody who was like a son of man. He was like a human being. Now Daniel could use the phrase son of man because son of man was an idiom in Aramaic. He wrote chapter 7 of Daniel in Aramaic. Baonash. Baonash in Aramaic means a person. He sees someone who is like a person, like a human being. So he can say, Son of Man. But when he said it, it was in a vision. It was in heaven. This is a very special Son of Man, because he is in heaven, and all power and all authority is given to him. Now, that would explain why Jesus could use a phrase, the Son of the Man, and choose it as a title, because it is a very mysterious title. And we know that in the first century there were people that were already talking about it. Who is this Son of Man in Daniel 7? What is this Son of Man in Daniel 7? Why did Daniel 7 talk about Baal-Nash? And there is a book. How many have heard of the Book of Enoch? Yay for Jerusalem. Okay, if you were from, how many here are from Ethiopia? Nobody from Ethiopia today. Oh, that's terrible. The church in Ethiopia has a Book of Enoch that is part of their canon. It's part of the Bible for them. And this book was written, actually several versions of this book were written. And one of the versions has a long group of parables. And in that group of parables, there is someone called that Son of Man. And it's a title, and it's special. And some of it takes place in the heavens. And in that book, the Son of Man is Enoch. And who is Enoch? Enoch is the person who walked with God. He did not die. He went to heaven. He is special. There are two people in the Hebrew Bible who did not die, Enoch and Elijah. So, to have a book written about Enoch in heaven as the Son of Man, it makes him very special. So people said, okay, we have this Son of Man as being a title, as being special in the first century, and Jesus is using it. That is the way people were talking 100 years ago. And then in New Testament scholarship, they got a good idea or a bad idea. They said, oh, the Son of Man, Jesus says the Son of Man will come. So Jesus was saying that this man from heaven will come, but it is not him. Go figure. That's American slang for... That is not very probable. Come up with a better explanation. That explanation is not good enough. The phrase, or this idea that the Son of Man was someone not Jesus, could only be argued behind the Gospels. If you read the Gospels that we have, then it is clear that the Son of Man is Jesus. When you look at all of the texts, some of them can only refer to Jesus. So Matthew, Mark, and Luke, they take the phrase and refer it to Jesus. But some scholars said, okay, they said it's Jesus. But when Jesus said it and the people did not have Matthew, Mark, and Luke, if he just said the Son of Man will come, maybe those people thought it was somebody else. Actually, we have a discussion in John where they ask that question. They say, tell us, who is this Son of Man? They did not know. Nevertheless, even so, it is still clear in some of the contexts that Jesus was referring to himself. We will look at them. Okay, that was the situation in New Testament scholarship up to about the middle of last century. And then something changed. Some people got the idea that we must look at how the phrase is used in Hebrew and in Aramaic. Ben Adam in Hebrew and Bar Nash in Aramaic. And two different theories were developed about 50 years ago. One of the theories said that Bar Nash, son of man, was an idiom, and it just meant I. So they said that it was like this. It was like if I came to someone and I said, Bar Nash does not have enough money to go to Tel Aviv. Can you help me? Could you give Bar Nash some money to go to Tel Aviv? What am I doing? I'm saying I need money, but I don't want to say I need money. So I say Bar Nash needs money. Now, that's a good idea. That's a very good idea. And a man wrote a very learned, intelligent, long article about that. And people thought, oh, that's very good. There were two things wrong with the idea. One, it does not explain the gospel texts that we have, Matthew, Mark, and Luke. But that doesn't bother some people. Two, it's not good Aramaic. Ah. Now that bothers people that pay attention to the languages. Because in Aramaic, it is true, they have the idiom Bar Nash, but it doesn't mean I. It's not a polite way of saying I. It's, in the idiom in Aramaic, it's a way of saying a human being. And you can use it for yourself if it is true for other people. If it's true for other people, yes, okay, I've heard.
Everybody needs money to go to television.
Do you have 3,000 shekels? Because Bar Nash needs to go to Tel Aviv. Perhaps. There's a famous story. Just last week we had Lag BaOmer, where they celebrate during the time of the last revolt, and Rabbi Akiva, there was a plague that stopped, and there were fires that were burnt, and so they have a celebration called 33. 33? What kind of celebration is that? 33 means the 33rd day, counting from the first Sunday after Pesach to Shavuot. The 33rd day is this celebration day. And so 33 in Hebrew is Lamed Gimel Lag. And Omer is the name of counting these numbers. So the 33rd day of the counting, we burn fires. And anyway, during this time, there was a man hiding in a cave, Bar Yochai, Shimon Bar Yochai. I was trying to get his first name. Shimon Bar Yochai was in a cave, and he was hiding from the Romans, and he was very very diligent. He was the kind of person who would follow a program forever. And he stayed in the cave for years. And he thought, maybe I should come out. When can I come out? And he was praying, and I don't know if he saw this or if it was a vision. I don't remember which account. Do you know if it was a vision or he saw it? The bird leaving the escaping. Anyway, he sees a bird. I don't know if he saw it or if he had a vision, but he saw a bird escape from someone trying to catch it. There was a trap and somebody was trying to catch a bird and the bird escapes. And so the man says, ah, thank you, God. That is a sign. If you take care of the birds like this, if you can have a bird escape from the hunter, then how much more can you take care of a barnash so that a barnash can escape from the Romans? And of course, he was talking about himself, but the example was true for everybody. You see, he said, you will take care of barnash. You'll take care of human beings. I can trust you. If you'll take care of all human beings, you'll take care of yours truly. Do you know that phrase in Chinese, yours truly? In English, it means me. It's a way of saying me, but I don't want to say me, so I say yours truly. Yours truly is teaching today about barnash. Okay? Now, that is, yours truly is what this man was trying to say barnash meant. But in fact, that what I'm telling you is it doesn't mean that. It means human being. In Aramaic, they had a different idiom for yours truly. Who knows the idiom? How do you say yours truly like with this idiom in Aramaic? Does anyone know?
Anochi.
Huh?
No.
You say hahu gavra. Hahu gavra is teaching today about barnasha. Yeah. So, that was one theory, that barnash just meant I. Well, Jesus was referring to himself sometimes, but barnash, as an Aramaic idiom, does not mean I. And ben adam, as an Aramaic idiom, does not mean I. It also means human being. Ben adam, barnash, same thing. So, I didn't work. So another scholar has spent his whole life writing books about barnash. He's British.
Which one?
Vermesh. No, Vermesh wrote the I one. And Casey's Aramaic isn't as good as Vermesh's. Vermesh, I think, actually knew Aramaic. Well, anyway, this other guy wrote about it, but when he wrote about it, he made many mistakes in Aramaic, which, to an Aramaic specialist, drops our confidence in what he has to say. But his argument went like this. Barnash means human being. If Jesus is teaching, and he says, Barnash has authority on earth to forgive sins, then what he's saying is a human being has authority on earth to forgive sins. So his theology, he's opening the door and he's saying, come one, come all, let's have a party, we can all forgive sins. That is what Barnash would mean if it was not a title. And so this man argued that we must look at the gospel stories, and any story where we can interpret it as being true for everybody, then in those stories, Barnash, we can say, is original, and it means human being. And all the other stories, we will say, they were created by the church at a later time. Of course, there are many problems with that theory. One of them is, the church did not understand the phrase. So he has the church create new texts with Barnash as a title, and yet in the whole history of the church, they didn't understand that title. So, in his history, Jesus has to talk about human beings, then the church has to create a special title, get it in the Gospels, and then the church has to immediately forget what the title means and spend the rest of 2,000 years with the title backwards. That is not very probable. I would say to that also, I would say, go figure. That means, come up with something better, please. Anyway, there's another problem with the Barnash theory. This man that was writing books on Barnash, he said that Barnash could only be a reference to somebody, to a human being, because it was impossible for Barnash to be a title, just like somebody in English is not a title. If I said that somebody will do this, you're not going to think that I'm referring to the great somebody in the clouds that's going to come to earth and save the whole world. Somebody just means somebody. It's a common English word, and so he argued it's a common Aramaic word, and it's so common it cannot be a title. And there is a problem. Mr. Casey, that's the man who wrote the books, he thought about the world in the first century as having two languages in use. People used two languages in this land. They used Greek, they used Aramaic. And many New Testament scholars think along those lines. They know there were other languages. Yes. Pontius Pilate could write a report in Latin and send it to Rome. Latin was here. They know that some Arabs in the desert were speaking both Arabic and had their own writing style for Aramaic. And they know that some people were using Hebrew. Maybe in the temple, maybe some rabbis would write some things in Hebrew. But their world was only using Aramaic and Greek commonly. Now, what's the problem with that? Those of you coming from China have probably heard one of your teachers tell you that that picture is incomplete. And within Jewish scholarship, 100 years ago, they divided. Some of them accepted that. They were following a man named Abraham Geiger. And they said, yes, two languages in use. But others, following Segal and Klausner and Albeck and a long line of Jewish scholars, said no. Three languages were being used commonly in the land. The language of the Mishnah was common Hebrew. And so you have common Hebrew, you have a low Hebrew, and you have a high Hebrew. High Hebrew was like the Bible. And at Qumran, they wrote in high Hebrew most of the time. We have a little bit, though, that they wrote in low Hebrew. So we know about the two levels. And in Bar Kokhba, in 132, 135, we have a revolt a war in this land. And we have letters written in Greek, in Aramaic, in Hebrew about common things. And the way they spell those letters shows us that they did not learn this as a book language. They learned it outside of a classroom as a spoken language. The biggest proof of that is, I can't write it on the board, there is a particle, et. Ani ra'iti et haheder. I saw the room, et. That particle, et, every Hebrew student learns it within 1 month of starting Hebrew. They learn the word et. They learn to write it all by itself. But when these people with Bar Kokhba, when they wrote et, they didn't say ani ra'iti et haheder. They wrote the way they spoke. And they wrote ani ra'iti taheder. And that is what people do today also. If you go to Tel Aviv, Lama shatiti cafe? Ratiti ta cafe. You can say ta cafe. Raita tamchonit? Did you see that car? You can put et in front of the noun. And that's what they did. So scholars today know that the along the two tracks of Jewish scholarship from 100 years ago, the one that said it was Hebrew was a common language and that Low Hebrew existed, they were correct. And so this has been a revolution in Mishnaic Hebrew scholarship. For the past 50 years in Mishnaic Hebrew scholarship, they look at this land and they say there are three languages in common use. People could speak three languages here, not two. So how does this affect Barnasha or Barnash? And the answer is, now Barnash can be a title. It is possible for Barnash to be a title. How? Well, if I am speaking, well listen, now you know Barnash means somebody. But listen to what happens if I speak to somebody in English and I say, I want to teach you about Barnash and what he has to offer you. Oh, he wants to teach me about Barnash. Barnash. What is this Barnash? It's something else. It doesn't mean somebody. I'm not just telling him I want to teach you about somebody. I'm saying I want to teach you about a special somebody called Barnash. Because I'm mixing two languages. And what does that mean? That means that Jesus could speak. We know that, for instance, we know that all ancient parables were taught in Hebrew. In the Jewish culture, when someone would speak a parable, it didn't matter what language had been spoken before. When he would begin with the parable, he would change to Hebrew. We have 417 Tanaitic parables from the early rabbinic age. They are all 417 in Hebrew. 100%. That's very strict. I mean, you just don't get things 100% very often in ancient scholarship. So this is impressive. Anyway, if Jesus is speaking, and then in the middle of Hebrew speech he says Barnash, this is for you to know that Barnash has authority on earth to forgive sin. What does that sound like?
So the conversation is in Aramaic?
No. The conversation, if it was in Aramaic, then you don't get a language change. If the conversation is in Hebrew, if he says, Kadesh Tedo She Lebar Nash, Yeshlo Samchut O Veshut, Lislo Hataim, Al Haaretz. What does that mean?
Well, I think sometimes when he would switch to tell a parable, it would switch to Hebrew.
Just in general, in rabbinic literature. Rabbinic literature is written both in Hebrew and in Aramaic.
Right.
But it doesn't matter which language was being spoken before the parable. When they get to the parable, they change to Hebrew.
Right.
Now, if Jesus says in Hebrew, you need to know that Barnash has authority on earth to forgive sins,